This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the podcast that aims to keep you caught up and up to date on everything that's going on. Obviously, we've moved. I keep saying we. Who's we? It's me. We, you, and I suppose. We have moved to a 3-episode-a-week format, whereby I bring you a news catch-up on a Monday, entertainment catch-up on a Wednesday, and then an interview for you to enjoy on the Friday. Someone who's done something interesting, is doing something interesting, has something interesting going on. And we'll get to that now in a second. I hope you're feeling good. I hope you had a good week. I'm not going to lie, guys. I've not had a great week. This week has not been the one. I am terrible at anything adult. Like anything admin-y, anything to do with money, banks, revenue, like any of that stuff breaks me out in hives. Like I would happily hand over all of my money and big life decisions to someone else forever. Like that would bring me a lot of peace. And I've had to do a lot of that stuff this week and it makes me feel miserable. It makes me feel like I'm not a grown up. It makes me have imposter syndrome on the highest level and I hate all of it. And this week has been a lot of that. So I'm not going to pretend like this has been a great week because it simply has not. And as I always say, every week can't be a good one. And this has not been one of those, but that's okay. That's just life, isn't it? And I'm sure I'll have a great one coming up again soon. I did start getting IPL this morning, which is exciting. Kind of vaguely wanted to get IPL for a long time. It's basically like a laser treatment for your skin. And it is said to like improve your skin's texture, redness, reduce any kind of discoloration, and just generally make your skin look smoother and younger and all the things you want if you're subscribing to current beauty standards. So I was invited into the Institute of Dermatologists this morning and for a skin assessment. And then she said, do you want to just do it now? And I was like, yeah, it's not pleasant, but it's not like viciously sore. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the results. So I started it this morning. I'll have 4 more treatments of the initial phase. You get it done 4 times with 4 weeks in between, and then you just kind of maintain it twice a year. I don't know, guys, like we'll see. Do you know what I mean? This, by the way, this was, as I said, I was invited in, obviously through my work as a beauty journalist, I got invited to try a lot of different treatments. So that's what was happening here, to be very clear about that. But yeah, we'll see. However, you may have seen on my Instagram stories, she took some clinical photographs of my skin before we actually did the treatment in order to assess kind of what I needed or what my skin needed or what could be improved. And my God, they were humbling. Like they were humbling. One of them showed all the redness, and then the other one showed all the brown spots, which is like any kind of freckles or like sun damage or anything. And wow, not at first of all, I mean, also not a kind angle. So even the angle we were looking at my face was kind of troubling. But I'm happy to say it didn't upset me. It actually made me laugh a lot, a lot. And I'm going to make a reel at the end of all the treatment, and I will include those photographs in it, because truly gave me such a laugh. So there you go. That was probably the bright spot of my week. Now, though, I will talk to you about today's interview. Lots of you asked me if this was going to happen because, of course, I was in Galway last week doing an event in Kenny's Bookshop with Laura De Barra to celebrate the launch of her new book, which is called Garment Goddess. And loads of people were like, are you recording something? Are you recording something with her? Are you recording something with her? Of course I did. Of course I did. I went to Laura's hotel in the afternoon before the event, and we sat down and talked about Garment Goddess, her new book, which focuses on making good decisions when you're buying clothes and also caring for your clothes well. It teaches you what to look out for, teaches you basic sewing tips, and it's all in Laura's just incredibly chic, fabulously camp style. And she herself is brilliant. If you're not familiar with Laura from social media, which I know lots of you will be, you definitely just stick around because she is so great. And the story of how she kind of came to be doing what she's doing now, I think is great as well. So without further ado, let's listen to Laura De Barra. Well, Laura De Barra, we are in the beautiful setting of the G Hotel in Galway, which actually holds so many memories for me from like a different era of my life. Have you been here before?
No, I was in Galway, I think, when I was like 12, and I've never been back, but I only ever hear incredible things about Galway.
Galway's amazing, yeah. It's
and
really
people
good.
In Galway are incredible. Like I always say they're so gentle. Like I had a flatmate from Galway and all his friends from Galway. Everyone's just so gentle in Galway. I love it.
It's and everybody here knows how to have a good time. Like they once called this place, or when I moved here, people used to say it's the graveyard of ambition, because people come and then they never leave because it's so great.
And now I want to move here.
Yeah, I would move here. I would raise my kids here like happily. I think I would have a very happy life here. But I can't because my life is in Dublin. But under different circumstances, I would be very happy to live here. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Galway. We are here to talk about your third book, which is out, Garment Goddess. How are you feeling about it all?
It's really surreal. I think I got back into Ireland yesterday, and then because I live over in London, sometimes you have a bit of space from, in a bad way, from anything you're doing, because any of the work I do around any author work is all in Ireland. And when I got back, I saw bookstores today with it in the windows. We did an event last night in Cork. We have the event with you this evening. It's all feeling really real.
Yeah.
And I think this book is, I think I felt like I had to kind of prove myself a little more in it, because I hadn't worked in fashion, as in it's my background, but I think I hadn't ever kind of come out as a fashion girly, you know. So I really wanted this book to have loads in it. So the writing process of this was much harder than the other DIY books, because I'm doing DIY every day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm siliconing a bath and I'm like, oh, I'm going to write about siliconing a bath tonight. Whereas this, it's just jam-packed. And I think I had just worked so hard in it that now actually seeing it in a bookshop, it just feels so nice. You know, I feel like this, I can kind of ease up on myself a bit, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. Because it's funny that you say you kind of had to prove yourself as a fashion girly, but I think anyone who follows you on Instagram knows that you have a passion for fashion, if you'll excuse the expression. But just for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about your career, because you do have a background in fashion.
Yeah, I've always loved it. Like from an early age, my grandmother taught me how to sew, and I was always making clothes. I actually did a TV show segment on RTE that used to be played during The Den. Called Clobber, where I'd teach people how to make things out of things that are around the house, so handbags out of tights and all these bits and pieces. And then I always knew I wanted to be in fashion. Did a college comm course for a year in Cork, and then I went and somehow got into ECA. I don't know how. Skipped first year and did my degree there.
So ECA, for people who don't know,
Edinburgh College of Art, and it's it changed my life being there. I worked day and night to even, because I had to self-fund. So I worked every bar job going. I had three jobs for my final year, but I met my best friends for my entire life. I met the most amazing people, got my degree there, and then I worked for a fashion supplier. I did other things, an internship at River Island, and then I got my main fashion job was working for a Turkish fashion supplier. Mm-hmm. So we used to supply high street brands. And then I kind of worked my way up there. I ended up, when I had left, I was manager of menswear.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then I went into a boutique brand. But I kind of fell out of love with designing fashion when the fast fashion trend really hit.
Yeah.
Like it just became, usually I would be the one that would always go through all the reports and all the catwalks and start designing. And then all of a sudden, they were just showing us a picture of a celebrity being like, we need this in store in 8 weeks. There's no design there. You're just supplying things that are low quality. So I remember just taking a step back because I was just thinking, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be part of this. I had a real, like, my conscience was kind of like, I don't want to be part of this. Like, we're creating landfill.
Mm.
We're putting out garments where the zips don't even work on the pockets and stuff. You know, it's just a photographed item. So that's when I ended up going into property. My boss in fashion actually was like, I don't want to lose you. Why don't you come and style some properties for me? And then I just ended up being like, no one's showing up for repairs. Even the agents we pay to buy these properties aren't doing us any justice. So I just started moving into property development then just by accident, I think.
It's interesting how it all kind of happened organically for you. Like, it feels like this is the path you were meant to be on, I feel like.
Yeah, but like, I think like last night we were talking at one of the events and I'd almost kind of forgotten this. I didn't know what I was doing for ages. Like, I was like 23, I think, when I did my degree, or 22, I think. I was working like on a makeup counter in Brown Thomas for a while. I just didn't know. And like, the girls I was working with were all like super talented and super good at makeup. That is not me. Like, if I manage to get away with it, I'm good, you know, like, but I was, you know, I didn't know what I was doing for so long. And now I think I've really learned that just like ease up a little bit and it'll come and find you. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So that's definitely how it's been with that.
It is funny though. I think when you're in your 20s, like your early to mid 20s, you feel like everybody else has got it figured out and I don't. But then the reality is nobody's got it figured out. And it's actually, I think, only as you get older, you know yourself more, as you kind of do and rule out things, that you start to feel like, okay, these are actually what's important to me.
Yeah. And like, your friend who had a pension at 20 that you were like, oh my God, like they're such an adult, is now turning around to you at 40 going, I hate my job. I've been in it for like 30 years already. Or something crazy. And like, you know, you just realize that everyone has some kind of internal struggle with stuff like this. You know? Some are more visible, some aren't.
Yeah.
And I think like life and work and stuff is more about enjoying it. Like, I think I have a lot of conversations with friends. I think it's just our age as well at the moment that like, we just want to wake up and not feel dread around work or stress, you know?
Yeah.
Just to be able to do something you enjoy is very privileged state to be in, you know.
Yeah. And to find that like work-life balance
It's so hard.
It's so hard, but it just gets more and more important, I think, as you get older.
Yeah Like, I like my property job, at one stage I had 60 tenants 7 days a week, constantly going. Then you have the guilt, obviously, as a woman, you are put into positions where you should be a carer at all time. People expect like that you will never say no to them. And I ended up having to cut off that investor and move on to other and work with other people. I've had to do that a lot in my career because I had no balance. You know, like, it was like you're so stressed all the time, there's no lifestyle out of it. So like, I finally got into that stage where lifestyle is more important, you know.
So this book then, tell me where this came from. As I said at the start, this is your third book, and it's very similar to the other books in tone, which I think is great. Like, you have carved out such a unique voice, you know, the Laura DeBar voice. Everybody knows that, you know, you're going to get things explained really clearly. The illustrations are unbelievable. But I know from being your friend that you work so hard on every detail of every book. But why was it important to do this book at this time about these topics?
I think when Gaff Goddess was born, it was at a time when I started to realise, through managing so many tenants, there's so much about our homes that we don't know. And the generation before us could not pass it down because my grandmother wouldn't know how a brand new Wi-Fi operated dishwasher works. It's a grey area because there's the knowledge isn't being passed down. And then when the response from the other two books, I think people were like, I never knew that, I wanted to know that, and now I know it, I'm so glad I know it. And then I think, like, basically people were asking me so many questions when I would share something like, this dress is low quality, the dress that everyone's buying from this brand or whatever, that I started to realise, hang on a second, there's a Gaff Goddess for almost everything in our lives, you know. Decor Galore was the answer to like buying an interior. And with Gaff Goddess, with Garment Goddess, sorry, I'm going to be doing that now all week. With Garment Goddess, I just found that like, we are the generation before us. Like when I talk to my mum about clothing and she's like, I bought this jumper last year from this brand and I rebought it this year and it's lighter, it's bad quality, it's not washing. Mm. They don't know because they haven't lived in this fast fashion era.
Yeah.
And then when I'd be explaining it to someone like my mum, she'd be like, I never knew that about fabric composition. I never knew that's how a jumper was constructed and that what they've done is they've skipped a stage. So I think it was just organically happening. And then I think now is the time. We're all a bit sick. We're let down by clothing. And like, the thing is, like, a lot of teaching around fashion or sustainable fashion has shame attached to it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, you'll know this as a woman. I deal with enough shame now about anything that we do.
Yeah.
I don't want my clothes to be attached to shame either. I think we like expressing through clothing. Or even if you just like clothing or you like wearing the same thing every day, you know, even if you're not flamboyant in the way you dress, we like our clothes, but we feel too shameful to say that because then we sound like we're either airheads or that we're wasteful or that we're contributing to the landfill. There is actually a space for us to be conscious and still shop.
Yeah.
And I think I was very scared of talking about sustainable fashion because people want you to be like, they want me to come in a potato sack, you know, and just be like, I am 100% sustainable.
Mm.
But that's makes everyone afraid of being sustainable in fashion.
Yeah, what like one thing I love in the book is that there's no judgment. Like, you know, at one stage you say, look, we all own fast fashion items. Like, that is a reality of living in the time that we live in. You know, none of us are immune. You know, sometimes you're stuck and that's what you do. You know, you pick something up. It's not like anyone, well, maybe like 2% of people on the planet are able to open their wardrobe and say that everything in here is like sustainably sourced, sustainably made, you know, living wage, all that kind of stuff. But it's about trying to almost be sustainable within those kind of fast fashion garments, which is something that I talk about a lot because as a plus size person, I don't have access to the same clothes as other people. Like, that's just a reality. It's not an excuse. But, you know, I try and be really mindful about when I buy what I buy and being sure that I'm going to wear whatever it is loads, you know.
That's sustainable fashion.
I used to. Not to be like that.
But I do think we all are more like that now, you know. Like, I think all of us have gone through stages of casting off our clothes quicker, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was just too easy to do it as well.
Mm.
But now I think, like I think the way you shop is sustainable fashion.
Mm.
Because this whole thing of, like, you can, like, you can buy as much as you want and throw away as much as you want as long as you're doing it vintage. Like, vintage has turned into massive consumption drive.
Yeah.
Even when you go into like some companies that they're like, this is our ethical brand,
mm.
it's still buying. Whereas if you're buying to last a long time and you're like, okay, I'm going to buy this within and make sure that it has the integrity and it can do what I need it to do.
Mm.
And I'm going to keep it. Now, don't get me wrong, producers can fuck us over. You know, you can put all the work into it and that's when it might fall apart. That's why the book, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
It's teaching you, like, I even teach you in some of the chapters, like, how to examine stitching, like I would have done, you know.
These are the things that I find absolutely fascinating in the book, is that, like, I really knew, I had never even considered stitching until you started talking about it on your Instagram.
Yeah.
And obviously it's in the book as well. Like, I had never considered that different stitches are stronger, weaker, that, like, you know, you can identify whether steps have been skipped or whether something's fast-tracked or whatever. Like, and all of that information is in the book. And it's so useful because I would not have known previously how to look for quality. So what are your, you know, some of the tips that are in the book for trying to buy well?
I think the first thing that I would always do is, like you say, right, accessibility to the best sustainable stuff. It just doesn't exist, right? Mm. So sizing, budget, where you live.
Mm.
You know, like, you mightn't be able to get to it. So if you are, like, I'm wearing a high street store jumper right now, but I was able to examine it by, usually I will just examine the fabric composition. Is it fit for purpose?
Mm.
So there's a lot in the chapter on fabric, like, I'm never going to say, like, you can only buy natural fabrics from now on. They're hard to get your hands on these days.
Yeah.
It's more going, right, I'm buying this for work. It's synthetic. This is a job that I sweat a lot in. I'm going to sweat even more in that.
Yeah.
It's being just aware of what you're buying and that it's fit for that purpose. And then the construction of the garment.
Mm.
So, like, you know, when someone, if you're worried about things being ethically made, you can figure that out on the shop floor. If you see stitching that isn't even and look like it's really nicely done, the person sewing that, if it's all small, like all different size stitches or runched and it's poorly stitched or you look like the stitches have gone back over again, that is somebody who has not been trained properly.
Mm.
And if they've not been trained properly, they're not getting paid properly.
Mm.
Or it's somebody who has had to work so fast to be able to make their money. So the minute I see that, I don't want that garment.
Mm.
That garment is somebody's been really unfairly treated with that. And then from a construction point of view, that's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
And then you want to look at, like, even out, there's a big section on, like, zips and buttons and fastenings. Yeah. And, like, I don't want to spoil it necessarily for people, but I also want to let people know, like, it's stuff that, like, it is interesting and it makes you such an expert on the shop floor.
Yeah, and, like, simple tips, like, I'm sorry, I also don't want to spoil your book, but, like, even things like, you know, lying a garment down flat and looking at whether the zip lays flat or whether it's kind of, you know, runched up. Like, I think these, the tips are so useful. I'm interested because obviously there's choosing your clothes and then there's caring for your clothes, which is such a huge part of the book. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Like, I remember learning from you about fabric softener. It has completely changed my life. I no longer use it ever. Is there ever a time you think people should use fabric softener?
It can work if you actually turn over the packet of a fabric softener, even though in the adverts it'll be a baby bouncing on a towel and it'll tell you not to use it on kids' wear or on towels. It'll tell you that it is suitable for wool, 100% wool, and silks, because they're fibers, basically, they'll have a bit of keratin in them. It's hair, it's like putting conditioner. So fabric softener is like conditioner that doesn't wash out. It's usually got an animal fat in it. It stays on, it attracts bacteria, odour. It'll be lovely for two washes and then after a while. But the companies are telling you not to use it on your towels, your bedding. Like, if you feel like you sweat a lot at night, which I think is super normal, If your bed sheets are washed with fabric softener, it's because that's stopping your sweat evaporating and it's making you hotter. So it's just not a great product. And I think care is for a long lasting wardrobe, you can buy well all you want, but if you're not looking after the clothes, it makes such a difference. And what I wanted with the book as well, I wanted people to make a difference to their wardrobe without buying anything.
Yeah.
So the care section's about that. It's like, how do you, even the way you hang stuff, even store stuff, you know, like, we're told constantly with fashion how to store loads of stuff we don't want. Fold it really nicely. Use loads of vacuum pack bags, boxes, but people don't realise what vacuum packing does to fibres and, like, how long it takes to go back to normal. And I think people don't realise that, like, if you just have, like, in Decor Galore, there's a way to arrange your wardrobe so that you get the most use out of it. You arrange it in where you wear the garments. So you have, like, a work section, drink section, date section, you know, that kind of, like, and then you wear your clothes more. And I think people aren't told that. They're just told, if you just buy a nice crisp white shirt every season, this thing of, like, this, like, crisp white shirt, a good pair of jeans, like, all this is shoved down our necks constantly. We're never told to look at what we already have and how to care for it.
But also, I think sometimes if you are someone who has a lot of clothes, like, if you are someone who has had a pretty hardcore shopping habit and you have loads of clothes, it's impossible to see what you have.
It is. And also,
and I say that as someone who has experienced that, like, that's not me being judgy. Like, I certainly found I got to a point where I was like, I can't see anything.
You're so blind, like, to it.
Yeah.
And all you're thinking of is storing it. Like, I remember we used to do this thing at the office where you got to keep samples that they were throwing out. And my bedroom was overflowing because I was like, this is free clothes. And, like, I was
obviously early, I'm taking it.
I was like, yoink. Even when there's, like, a patch cut out for sampling or whatever, I'm like, I'll take it and sew it up. I think, like, obviously, in early days of fashion, wasn't earning very much, couldn't afford to shop. But my room was overwhelmed. And like that, I would spend, like, hours folding everything into place, but I wasn't wearing any of it.
Yeah.
I think, like, when people are in that situation, group. This is what I did with my mum, because she's like, I have nothing to wear. And she's an overflowing wardrobe. We grouped everything right down to tiny groups. So there's a clothes that she goes for a walk in, tops, bottoms, hoodies. And then we realised she's got more hoodies for going for a walk in than anything else. Never buy another hoodie to go for a walk in again. Or, like, maybe we can donate some of them. I think, like, that's, you've got to start grouping things. Like, even in the home and interiors, I always say, like, group all your bits. If you feel like you've loads of clutter and you realise you've six scissors, probably don't need them. That's how you can kind of downsize and wear more. But you're right, like, you can just become so unaware of what you have and feel like you don't have enough. And I think, like, the best place to start after grouping is going through the fabric composition and being like, this is a really nice cotton knitted jumper. This will last years. I'm going to match this up with something else.
Yeah, I feel like I'm, like, currently trying to downsize my wardrobe, and I feel like I need someone to come into my house and be like, you require only this many pairs of trousers, you require only this many jumpers, only this many, like, I've got, like, I mean, Laura, I'm not joking, I've got, like, 40 t-shirts.
I would die to come into your house and do that with
you. I will. I would die for you to do that. I would die of embarrassment as well. Oh my God. In addition to being so happy.
I am like the least judgy person about stuff like this. And you know what I'm like with this stuff. I would just be more like, oh my God, this is fun.
I have so many t-shirts, but they all are connected to like a moment.
And that's okay. You can have as many t-shirts as you want. If they're like, I've got a t-shirt from a bar job that I had in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It doesn't even fucking fit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep thinking, can I curse?
You can.
Oh my God, I need to clean
absolutely.
Out my meds
fuck it
for
up.
This week. I wear like I don't even fit in the thing. Like it was when I was like a 20-year-old student or something like that. Like I have brought it from house to house to house because it's memories.
Yeah.
So like I wouldn't feel a guilt with that. They're personal things, you know what I mean? Mm. But there's probably other stuff that you're like, I'm keeping it because I thought it was so expensive at the time.
Yeah.
I feel weird about throwing it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So let's talk about throwing out, because obviously that's in the book as well. Like sometimes you do need to get rid of clothes. That's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
But you have some really good instructions on how to do those clear outs.
I have a chapter called A Jew, where you're saying goodbye to your stuff. And in Ireland, we've got this massive culture of putting everything into a black bag and giving it to a charity shop. And it's like the worst thing that we could be doing.
My shame. I literally have three bags on my landing currently waiting for transport.
But I never want people to feel guilty or shame because we're not aware. And I've done it. Like, I remember chatting to a guy at a charity shop once where I was like, are these okay in this bag? And then he was like, do you know what's really helpful for us is if you divide them into categories. So even in the bag, if they're folded in and you just have a little note saying, kids 4 to 6 years, because they don't put everything out in the shop floor straight away.
Right.
So like the first thing you want to do when you have anything is the first thing I do that I find so helpful, and I would love if people did this more, is anything that's practical, suiting, winter coats, even something like a tracksuit, and it's in great condition. And I don't mean like a stain here and there or a bit worn. I mean really good condition. Ring local women's shelters, ring refuges. I'll always give my winter coat to a shelter, or Shane's winter coats to a shelter first.
Yeah.
And I make sure I clean it, because it's with dignity you need to have, make sure that people are being dressed.
I actually always get a lot of questions from people every time I say that I've donated something to a direct provision centre. People are always like, how do I do that? You can actually honestly just ring up the direct provision centre and ask if they're accepting things.
Yeah.
That's the quickest way. Find your local one, because they're everywhere, you know, and those people really need help.
And they'll say to you, like I remember ringing one time, they were like, we're really desperately looking for a slim man's trouser or some kind of suit. We have somebody who's attending an interview.
Yeah.
Well, the only slim man I know is my husband, right? So I went straight in and was like, you know, like,
do you have an old suit?
And he was like, yeah. And then you just have, you know, that could have just ended up going into, because what happens when you donate to a charity shop? Charity shop, like, even though people are like, I'm not a charity, but like charities also have boundaries in what they can take, what they can store. And they can also make money by donating your stuff to be recycled. And a lot of that recycling doesn't get recycled. Yeah. And it ends up in places where it ravages villages and economies. So I think you have to, first of all, look at your stuff and go, what can I donate to somebody who straight away making no profit for anybody? I'm just giving this as a gift to somebody.
Which feels really good.
And when, it takes when a that bit more time.
When you know you've given something to someone who needs it. Like even with, I find, say with the kids, buggies or car seats or things like that. Like it feels great to know that someone who needs it is getting it directly.
Yeah. And especially if it's something I think where somebody's like, I spent a lot of money on that. It doesn't fit me or it doesn't fit me right. But I don't want to throw it out because I feel guilty.
Yeah.
Giving it to someone you know is going to get use out of it, you don't feel that guilt.
No, you'll get rid of that guilt. Yeah.
You also like, you know, you really wanted to wear that garment loads and you couldn't, someone else can.
Yeah.
So you actually, it still serves its purpose that you bought it for. Mm. And then when you're dividing up from that, then you want to look at things like what is actually in crap condition that can't be sold.
Mm-hmm.
That's your recycling pile. And when you donate to a charity shop, you can also wrap up some stuff that and in a separate bag and just say, this is for recycling or rags.
Mm.
And they can make money off selling that to a recycler. The clothing bins at the side of the street,
yes,
I need to talk to people about, right?
Okay.
I've used them. Mm-hmm. There was a state, like the marketing on them is stunning.
Mm-hmm.
We were all like, how amazing. I live in a flat in a city centre. Mm. I can just walk outside my flat, fill that up and go. But on the side, they'll have details of where that's actually going. And if you are donating stuff that's like a mixed T-shirt that's like polyester, viscose and cotton, mm-hmm. you can't separate them anyway. They can't be recycled. That's going to landfill.
Mm.
So like you want to just make sure. And sometimes I've put really good samples that I've gotten at work into those clothing bins, not realizing it's going to be like it's going to be recycled.
Mm.
That could have gone to a charity shop and made them some money.
Yeah.
So you have to divide. You know, when you recycle anything in your house and at the kitchen bin, the clothes are the same.
Yeah.
You've got to think like, what bin does this go into? What bin does this go into? It does take more time, but otherwise you're not doing what you think. It's not giving what we think it's giving.
You know, as well, I was a Cork legend, PJ Kirby recently posted. Love. He was like, what happened to jumble sales? And I was like, yeah, I've recently been thinking in America, there's this culture of garage sales.
Yeah. There was one of Vanderpump Rules when they said that Jack's left with my there favorite was. Jumble sale of all.
There was. And I really wish we were doing that more now as a culture, because I have like some wedding presents that like are just will never use. Do you know what I mean? I'm never going to use them, but someone else would love them.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have clothes at the moment. I'm going through a bit of a style transition. So I have clothes at the moment that are really great, like super high quality that I know loads of people would love. And you want to make sure they get into the right hands. I'm like, why aren't we doing more like organic clothing sales?
That we should actually do like a Dublin swap shop or like, you know, like bring a trestle table, set yourself up.
Well, I actually saw that Oxfam, I think, have coming up at the end of February, start of March. I'll find a link and put it in the show notes if I'm getting any of this information right. They're encouraging people to have clothes swap parties.
Incredible.
Where you get your kind of people together, your friends or family, and then you can swap clothes. But again, like as a plus size person, I have two friends. Two friends and who we can kind of share clothes with and we all are like, it's such a novelty to even be able to do that, but like
it is,
you know, look, there's ways around this, and we probably need to do more to try and implement those kind of systems in our lives as well.
Definitely. And I think like there's a place, if I lived in Dublin, there's this place that I always think about it when there's something that I'm like, okay, I'm not going to wear this anymore, I'm going to donate this because I want to keep things a bit light in my house as well. And like there's Change Clothes Crumlin.
Mm.
Have you seen? That is incredible. Mm-hmm. So you can bring your old clothes in there or clothes that you're not going to wear in there, and they will sell it on at a much cheaper price. It's like, it's just incredible. Like, have a look at it. It's on Instagram. They do amazing work.
Mm.
They were up for an award recently, actually. They've just done, it's like two women that run it. Like, I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
And that's where I would be putting my clothes in as well. Like, you're directly putting it to really good use.
Now, while we're talking about this, I think we have to talk about fixing and sewing and altering. Mm. Because I actually cannot believe that you have managed to explain simple alterations complete with illustrations and like the very basics of sewing in this book. Like it is such an achievement, Laura.
It wrecked my head because I was like, how do I explain something I do all the time that is so simple and you only get a couple of pages to do it? Like I could have gone on for a whole book on even how to sew, but I had to pick. First of all, I wanted just to teach people out there who've never sewn in their lives, right? how do you actually just sew a couple of stitches? Yeah. What's it supposed to look like?
I need that, and that's what I needed.
And it's like, it's made easier. I think sometimes, like, when I was learning how to sew, you're learning from somebody in person. Mm. And, like, I'm left-handed as well. So, like, I always had to learn everything in sewing a backwards way. Because my brain is going, my hand doesn't, her other hand. Oh. So I wanted to make sure that it just felt easy, because I've always found it hard to learn that stuff. Because I've got to reverse it all in my head. And then, and on the pages as well, you can turn it upside down if your other hands, or it's not working for you, or put it as a diagonal. Mm. I wanted, that's why they're in a certain layout. And then with clothes that we buy, like fast fashion, because we are, like, we have no choice but to buy it, this is the same repairs. I didn't want it to do like a craft book. There's loads of those out there. The same problems come up with all fast fashion clothes. Mm. So I just put in those repairs, because I had about 50 repairs I wanted to put in there.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, do you know what? People don't need that. They need to know how to replace a button, how to put a little hook and eye above a zip, because they're not in any fast fashion clothes anymore and the zip is coming down. And they need to know how to, like, if your heel goes through your hem, how to bring that up. And ripped pockets in coats.
Yeah.
Like, I say it in the book, like, you get a coat and it's fabulous, and then by the end of the winter, your car keys are, like, down in the bottom of your...
Yeah,
and they're, like, jingling at your knees. So it's, like, how to fix the stuff that does happen to our clothes these days.
Yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed that, because, like... Massively. I didn't know if it was going to come across
well. I think it comes across really well, because the thing is, that's so empowering. Like, I think, you know, I would often commiserate with loads of people who are kind of similar age to me about the fact that our parents, it feels like our parents or our grandparents certainly just knew how to do a lot more than we do. And I think this is something that comes out in all of your work, Laura, is it's really empowering. Like, it makes you feel like, oh no, I can do this. Like, and also I love, you know, that recent thing in on TikTok that, like, how hard could it be? Boys do it.
There we go. You know what I mean?
Like, it is that. But once you have that thought that, like, no, this is a thing that people can do, and I can do this too. And that is the message that I feel like you consistently send. And you simplify things that previously might have felt intimidating. And then all of a sudden people are empowered and they're fixing their own clothes and they're doing their own bits.
And feeling good about it, you know? Yeah. I think there's, like, I think I work in a very male-dominated area. And a lot of stuff I didn't learn because I was never exposed to it for societal reasons, I guess. Yeah. Or, like, I didn't have an interest. Like, you know what I mean? I was, like, off kissing boys and, like, smoking behind a bus shelter. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was, like, forgetting maths as soon as I was taught. You know, like, it's, like...
Important stuff.
Yeah, like, I was being a social butterfly, I guess we could call it, and very bold. So, like, I didn't learn this stuff. It's just grey areas.
Yeah.
And I just never want people to feel like it's luxury or, like... Like, I just want to have it there in a friendly way that people can be, like, dip in and dip out.
Yeah, and that's how it comes across. And, look, we've only touched on what's in the book. There's so much more. And I really, really think, and I felt this way about Gaff Goddess and A Day Core Galore as well. Like, they are reference books that you can have in your home and come back to, and there is an index and you can find the thing that you need whenever you need it. And I really hope that people get this book and take the kind of empowerment that it gives. I'd really like to ask you about community, because I feel like you've built something really beautiful, and I know it because I get feedback every time I do something with you.
Oh.
People just love you. How do you feel about that community?
I think, like, with my Instagram, I always just see it as, like, it's just my personal page that I'm sharing what I'm doing anyway. Like, you're the same. Yeah. Like, we're kind of, like, we're just kind of just going through our lives and sharing it. And because I'm in London, sometimes I feel like the people that follow me get it.
Yeah.
And it feels very safe, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I feel the same.
Yeah, it feels very safe. And it's like, fuck, I wish I had access to these women, you know, at certain times of my life, you know, when things were a bit lonelier. I get so emotional when I talk to myself like this.
It's okay.
I think I was talking just to someone about this last night, actually, a really good friend of mine. We had a drink after the show, and I was thinking, like, I wish this kind of community was around at times when I felt like...
Me too.
I was swimming against this tide all the time. And he brought up this thing, this something that I said. We could talk about it later, maybe. You'll probably find it really funny, but he was talking about this really pivotal moment when he was like, that was the moment that you decided you were just going to do it differently. And I think at that time I would have loved to have had, like, at your fingertips, you have women who think it's okay to be you.
Yeah.
You have women who like the same things as you.
Yeah.
You have women who are, like, not judgmental. Like, that's, that's one of the main things that I've, like, in the event last night, and it'll be the same tonight and the same tomorrow night, women of all ages and men of all ages, all different styles, like, no two people were the same.
Yeah.
And people aren't which is can happen a lot on social media. Sometimes it's that people are just like clones of the person they follow, but like the celebration is in our differences,
mm-hmm.
and it makes me feel just very safe.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I can slip up.
Yeah.
By being myself, because yeah. that's what we're celebrating in each other. And sometimes I think when it's kind of like that lemmings approach to flocking after people and following exactly what they do and being carbon copies of them, you feel like you can mess up and you've got a bit of imposter syndrome. I just don't feel like with the crowds that we follow, like we've got a similar audience, a lot of our audience overlaps.
Yeah, a lot of crossover, yeah.
They're just sound, smart people.
And I think it's really good to acknowledge that, because like obviously there's a lot of shit talked about the internet and about people online and trolls and nastiness, and look, that's all there, like that exists. However, there is also this beautiful connection that you can have with people who are like-minded, who make you feel less alone in the world.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, that's who I encounter. And if someone comes in trying to be nasty, I just block them.
Yeah, like I don't, I think like my mom said it to me once, like, do you not like, do you get any like hassle? And I was like, oh, my DMs are off. I just, as from a time point of view, because I don't really make a lot of money like on Instagram. I do like a couple of things with Bosch and stuff, but it's not income of producing enough for me to have an admin of that inbox. And my inbox is always disappearing and going in and out. So
it's really bad. It's functionally, it's
and
very
you can't
bad.
Search it like an email.
It's so annoying. I'm constantly losing messages.
But they make anyone who's making money from Instagram rely so heavily on a DM inbox.
Yeah.
But you can't use it properly. I hate it. It's like the worst tool on Instagram. So I don't have the DMs on, so nothing kind of comes in my door. Like, I'm very strict about what I'm exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, a lot of that has to do with the kind of work that I'm in as well.
Mm.
I face things that are positive, because if I let negatives get into my head at work, you know, I lose my confidence, and you need a lot of confidence when you're doing like property development. I just don't look for it. I don't know if it's out there, kind of a thing, you know, like all people get hate. Like, you know, when I go on the Late Late, men have gone mental this week about me saying gender roles and DIY. But like, they're not who I'd cut about with.
That's exactly, that's like, what I always come back to. I'm like, so what if some dickhead who I don't like thinks I'm a dickhead? Like oh well.
I think loads of people are dickheads.
Yeah,
I'm just,
exactly,
I'm
me
just,
too.
I think loads of people are dickheads. I'm just like, I'm just of the caliber of person that wouldn't say it to somebody.
Yeah.
But I always think as well, somebody said like, you know, somebody called me like a Muppet on the Late Late Show story or something like that. That doesn't affect me in the slightest, because I guess now also like I love therapy and do use therapy. So I'm very aware of like what comes out of people's mouths and people's fingers on keyboards is a sign of what's inside them.
100%.
So I don't see the comment directed at me. I automatically think that person. And my husband says this thing, people don't save bad behavior for one person. So like sometimes when I saw that comment, I thought, my first thought was just like, I hope whoever's in their life is okay.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking to me, a stranger like that, how are you treating people? Like your wife is probably getting some really horrible abuse from you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not saving this just for me. Like you're not just insanely triggered by me saying there's gender roles in DIY.
Yeah.
So I don't see a lot of it, because I personally love to positive kind of a vibe in general. I'm a bubbly person, and it is out there, but I just love to acknowledge the nicest side of these things, you know.
Yeah.
Like there's such a fun, cool crew that are just there every day. I see them on Instagram, you know, like we met through Instagram. And because we were like, God, we're girls that would hang out with each other.
Yeah.
There was a friend of mine that was at my wedding. I met her on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like we're now accessible to each other. You know, before you got married to a man and you had to hang out with his friends. And if you didn't like them.
How grim.
If you didn't like them, imagine. This is why we have things like housewives and all this kind of stuff. It's good people are forced to hang out. So, yeah, I think there is a lot of negativity. But like we're women, we're used to it.
Yeah.
It says nothing much about us.
Mm-mm.
God bless and good luck to them. But like they wouldn't be at a house party I'd be going to. I don't really care.
And that's it. Exactly. And your people are your people. You get each other. And if people don't get you, that's fine. They can just find the people they do get.
Tale as old as time. If I don't like somebody, the last thing I'm doing
is consulting them.
Is A, telling them, like, I don't give enough of a shit. B, if I see something and I go, that's a shit reel, I'm not going to then spend more time on it. I scroll past it and then I get to, like, I don't know, Dan Carter topless. And I'm like, this is what I was looking for today. And I teach the algorithm to send me things that I like. So I don't, I with TikTok especially, if I don't like something, I immediately get out of it.
Yeah.
If you comment and stuff like that, it's going to just
give you more.
Yeah. Yes. But if you're a miserable fucker, that's what you want.
I know.
You know?
I know. Well, look, I am such a fan, as you know, and I am so excited about this book getting out there. I think it's going to be so useful for loads of people.
I hope
you really enjoy this time and take it in. And, you know, I know you worked really hard on this
book.
Yeah,
you know the meltdowns, my gosh.
I really hope that you can soak it all up and feel the love that everyone has for you.
Thank you. And I'm really looking forward to tonight. Like, so many people in Cork were just like, please tell me there's going to be an episode. I can't believe, like, Louise is in Galway. One girl was even considering going up to Galway for it.
She should.
They love you. Like, you know what I mean?
You're well,
like,
again, it's our people. They're our people.
My husband always says, he's just like, oh, she's so famous, you know? And like that, and she doesn't, like, you don't come across with like that kind of like, but you're so well known.
Oh my God,
known.
I don't feel it at
he
all.
He loves it. Honestly, whenever I'm like, and I'm going to be doing it, and he's just like, that'll be big now, that'll be big. He's just, you know, and he lived in Dublin as well. So like, he was just like, oh, I remember to see you around in Dublin. You know, he's like, he's a big fan, big
I
fan.
I can't believe I've never met him. I have to meet him.
You would connect so much on like music and Dublin
we've
make
and
that all
happen.
Of it. You honestly.
We know, I'm sure, like a million of the same
he'll
people.
He'll be starstruck, so I'll just let you know that in advance.
Okay, well, enough about me. Lord Barra, thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's just about time for me to go, but before I do have some recommendations for you. I know I recommended a couple of things across the week, but there were a few other things that came through. First of all, someone got in touch with me after we talked about the cost of formula on Monday on the episode, in the news catch-up episode, and I talked about my experience with breastfeeding. And someone got in touch with me on Instagram to say that they had also had a complicated experience with breastfeeding, but that this book had really helped them. So I thought I would recommend it because I got a good few messages from people who had similar stories. So the book is called Milk, An Intimate History of Breastfeeding. And she says it's... you know, it's, she found the book really therapeutic. She said she initially thought it would be a love letter to breastfeeding and that that wouldn't be what she needed because she was feeling a lot of grief over the fact that her breastfeeding experience hadn't gone the way she wanted it to. But it's more about the history of breastfeeding and the fact that women have struggled with breastfeeding, you know, right the way through history, and it's not a new problem as it sometimes is sold to us as. So if you're someone who's interested in that kind of thing, the book, as I said, is called Milk, An Intimate History of Breastfeeding. It's by Joanna Wolfarth. I will put a link in the show notes. Also wanted to recommend, if you were listening last week, you will have heard Veda, the fabulous Veda, on the podcast, and Veda's film is now streaming on Virgin Media Player. So if you want to watch that, it's called Pregnant with a Drag Queen. If you missed it on Tuesday night, I really recommend it. It's only half an hour long, not even, and it's so entertaining, really, really good. I have begun watching Expats on Amazon Prime, which is, I'm only one episode in, but I'm very intrigued and really enjoying it so far, and I've heard good things. It stars Nicole Kidman. She is a woman living in Hong Kong, and there's kind of, you don't really know what's happened, but something has happened. Something is unfolding in the first episode. I kind of don't want to give too much away because I started watching it knowing nothing. And I think that's a good thing. But Nicole Kidman is in it, and it is the kind of, what you get to see is gorgeous in Hong Kong, the scenery and everything. And there is a good mix of locals and expats, as the title suggests. Although I actually hate the term expats, because why are some people called immigrants and other people are called expats? I think we all know why. But anyway, I'm enjoying it so far. So if you want to watch, we can discuss further. And then I also wanted to recommend Breakdown by Kathy Sweeney. That's a book. Kathy is going to be on the podcast next week. This book, I remember someone I follow on Instagram posted just a kind of screenshot of, I think it was like the blurb from the back of the book, or even like from a press release or something months ago. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. And it is amazing. It's good on just being a woman. It's good on motherhood. It's fiction, by the way. It's not a nonfiction. It is not a super hard read, and it's not super long either. It's only about 200 pages, so it's totally doable. And you could read it by next week if you had the time. I mean, I appreciate not everybody has the time, but you might, if you're interested in that kind of thing, it might be worth reading ahead of the interview next week. Although I think you would enjoy the interview anyway, because the themes in this book, I think, are things that many, 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 many women will relate to. So as I say, that's called Breakdown by Kathy Sweeney. So there you go. They're my recommendations. Look at me. Actual recommendations. Can you believe it? But I will leave you now, my friends, for the week. I will be back talking to you on Monday. I'm loving this now. You're sending me so many encouraging words, which I really, really appreciate, on Instagram and all the rest. Of course, you can find me on Instagram. If you could do me one favor, actually, if I could ask one thing of you. Well, I'll actually ask two things of you, but it's up to you what you actually do. If you could rate, review, subscribe, and if you like this podcast and you like what's happening with it and you like the current shape of it, please share it with your friends. Tell people about it. It really would be so helpful to me. I'm trying to get the word out about the new shape of it, because I think this will, the way it is now, is a little bit more accessible for people, because not everybody wants to listen to all the sections. So I would so appreciate that. And then the other thing, if you wanted to join the Patreon, I would be eternally, eternally grateful to you. If you feel like you pay a euro a week, 125 a week for this podcast, then maybe consider joining the Patreon. I would very, very much appreciate it. Patreon.com/catchupwithlouisemcsharry. I also hate doing that bit, by the way. I hate it so much, but I cannot make this podcast without your support. That's the reality of it. So I have to do it. Anywho, before I embarrass myself any further, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to all my contributors across the week. Thank you to Acast for having me on the network. And I hope that you have a good week. But as I said, they cannot all be good. And if it's not good, that's okay too. Put one foot in front of the other. And I will talk to you on Monday.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ArmOdillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.